Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we talk with writers about writing and their writing careers and how they got started and, you know, things they're working on, just whatever comes to mind. And we ask a whole bunch of questions, five official questions, but a whole bunch of other questions. I'm very excited today to have my guest, Teresa Trent. Hey, how are you doing, Teresa?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Happy to be here.
Well, I'm really glad to have you. I'm going to give you a brief intro for those who may not know who you are. Teresa Trent writes historical mysteries, cozy mysteries, romance, and short stories. So she is multi-talented. She lives in South Texas with her husband and son with Down syndrome and splits her time between writing and caretaking. So I assume that takes up, you know, all of your waking hours, just either writing or caretaking. Yeah. How old is your son?
My son is 29.
And is he your only son? Is he your only son, or do you have other children?
No, I have three children. He's my middle child. So I have another son and another daughter.
Ah, that's cool. And do they all sort of live in the Texas area, or are they aroundabouts?
They do. They're all in the Houston area. And I have to say, I have a stepson also who lives in Louisiana outside of Baton Rouge. So.
Okay, so you're super mom.
He's unforgivable.
So you're super mom. So you have multiple things to caretake of, and in between taking care of all those people, you were doing your writing. So that's great. And the book that we worked on together, tell us about the book that we worked on together in the series. What's it called?
So we worked on The Twist and Shout Murder, which is the first book in the Swinging 60s. That is the hardest series name to say, the Swinging 60s series, okay? And it is a book that starts in 1962, and my main character, Dot Morgan, is a young woman in secretarial school, and she is following a lot of the norms of the day. You know, it's like, what do you do? Well, you go to secretarial school and you be somebody's secretary, but Dot is a really bright person. And so she is learning to be a secretary, but she has a great mind, and she needs to be the head of the company, not the secretary. So, but in this book, she starts out and she's a little meek in the beginning. And I kind of wanted this book and this series to reflect how women grew during this time. And so she's going to start out, you know, saying, going along with the norms of the time, a lot of which have drifted over from the 1950s. But we know that the 1960s are here, and that great revolution of thinking is about to start. And so she's going to change with it. So this is, she is in North Texas. She's north of Dallas. And I really wanted to reflect this time when, you know, the cities were expanding, and this little town is going to become more and more part of modern times. But in the beginning, it's kind of 50-ish.
Yeah. Well, I was initially drawn to it because I was like, oh, cool. You know, swinging 60s, like how fun is that going to be? And I just love the whole idea of it. But I was wondering what made you settle on that decade, like what that time period? I guess that, you know, not really the decade, the sort of, like you were just saying, it's a very interesting time in our history. What made you want to explore that time?
You know, I think I really started with what I didn't want to write about. There are so many historical mysteries, historical series that take place in World War II. And I just find that really sad to read about, because it goes back to my son with Down syndrome, because those people were so hurt during that time as well. And so I knew I didn't want to write in that era. And I loved The Help, that the movie, the book. I just adored that. And I also really liked 11/22/63 by Stephen King. Just the way he had that character go out the back door of the hamburger place, and all of a sudden he's in, I think it starts in the 50s, like 57 or 58, I can't remember. I loved that. I just loved it with the car going by, and I'm like, this is such good writing. I want to just go out that door too. I want to go with that character. So when I started, I thought this is where I want to be. This is the time I want to be, because I was actually a child during all of this, believe it or not. And so I want to be a little older and see how the changes happen to people during this time.
Yeah, well, you do a good job with it because you do feel transported. You know, although I was not alive then, I was born in early 70s, and so I was a child of the 80s, you know.
Babysat, yes.
yeah. Absolutely. I would have been I was always a very good kid. Wouldn't give you any trouble at all. But yeah, you feel transported to the era, and it's especially through a woman's eyes, because you know, you do have those challenges where sort of, you know, and I remember my grandmother obviously was born way earlier than that, but she thought women should be, you know, should be a teacher. It's a good job for women.
That's right.
And you know, all the boys, she had three boys and four girls. She thought she had seven kids, and really encouraged her daughters to be teachers and her boys to be doctors. And that's sort of like, well, you know, maybe my aunt Cynthia wanted to be a doctor. I don't know. But it was sort of like, back then in the four, you know, that's what they thought. But everyone just did whatever they wanted to. It's fine. She says, as long as you go to college, you're okay. Basically, she let it all slide eventually when she figured out that wasn't going to be happening. She was cool about it. But yeah, I really like the way you did that. And I do think, and it's so funny because I love both those books that you mentioned too. I love The Help. I loved it, loved it, loved it. And the Stephen King book. When you were describing it, I'm like, yeah, I remember all the things you're saying. Those are both really cool references. So well done. That's why we connected. That's why we connected on the book, I think. We're similar.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. First official question. How did your writing career get started?
So I actually didn't start seriously writing until I was 49. I wanted to be a writer earlier. I loved, one of my best memories was sitting on the couch with my mother watching Murder, She Wrote. And I wanted to be Jessica Fletcher. I was in my 20s looking for tweed skirts and cable knit sweaters because, you know, in the South. And I just wanted that life. I wanted to write at my kitchen table with the clam chowder bubbling and all that stuff. I really wanted that. But, you know, life interferes. And I had my kids and my job. And so I didn't get back around to it till I was 49. And I just decided, okay, I'm about to turn 50. And this is something that if I don't make a serious commitment to, I'm always going to wonder, I could have been a great writer. Well, I don't know if I'm there yet, but you know, it's just like, if I don't do it, I'll never do it. And so it wasn't like I came to it naturally. I had to start reading about the craft of writing. I actually taught English. I taught a really good research paper, but as far as writing a novel, not a clue. You know, I had to learn a lot, made a lot of mistakes along the way. I started out self-publishing. I tried to get an agent and couldn't. So I thought, everybody's self-publishing, I'll do it. And I did, again, made a lot of mistakes. And about five books in, I decided to try for an agent again with a different series. And this time I got one. So, you know, one of the things my agent told me once was, you never give up. You never give up. And maybe that's true. I think I'm just too stubborn to give up, or I forget what they say, or I don't know, but keep trying.
Well, I think you're a great writer, obviously, or I wouldn't have said, hey, look, I want to publish your book. So I think you're great. I love your writing. But it's interesting how you got there. What level of English were you, what grade level were you teaching English?
I actually taught for 9 years, and I taught 7th through 12th. When I stopped teaching English when I had my third child, because my child with Down syndrome was my second child. And so I was dealing with that. And then I had a third child, and you know, I'm like, nah, I need to kick back here a little bit and not, you know, just concentrate on my kids.
Yeah. Focus turns to home. Yeah. That's,
yes.
I've started writing, well, I've been writing forever, but I got published right when when my son was born, because I was like, well, I don't have to go in the office anymore. I'm gonna stay home. And just seriously started sending things out, and then it all happened. But yeah, I think sometimes when you have like a life shift, you know, usually marriage, family, something, divorce, even like, you know, a change, that's when you sort of say, okay, let's do this other stuff too. You might as well, everything's up in the air. Everything's different. Let's throw another different thing in there, you know, whatever. It can be a weird motivating force to have upheaval in your life, because
yes,
having a baby is, you know, everyone's like, all the, oh, it's going to be great. It is great. It's wonderful, but it's also like really hard and exhausting. So it's not like the commercials make it look at all.
No,
it's messy. So your next question is, what is the most difficult part of the creative writing process for you, and what is the easiest?
The most difficult part for me is going from the first draft to the second draft. Because I am a planner. Okay. So I can write that, but I write fast. I use dictation. I just write fast. I've even, if I'm on a roll when I'm writing and I'm driving to pick up my son or something, I've got my phone and I'm saying the chapter into my phone. And then I go home and I put it in my computer. And because it's dictation, it's gobbledygook. So going from the first to the second draft, because that's where I have to fix all that stuff I did in a hurry. But I have to do it that way because, you know, I get a flow going. And my memory, I need to keep everything streaming. Because if I were to say, okay, I'm going to stop and I'll come back next month, I have no idea what I was writing. You know, I need to stop and come back the next day. So that big, big edit there takes me forever. And then the third draft, fourth draft, fifth draft, I get faster every single time, but it's just getting that initial piece of writing into something that I can actually edit without stopping every other word takes forever. The easiest part for me is writing the first draft. I adore it. I love writing the first draft because, you know, we're creative people and it's just this high. You're just going, oh, I know what I can do now. I know what, you know, I run out of the shower before saying, gotta write this down. Gotta write this down.
Yes.
So, you know, that's just a joy writing that first draft.
Do you outline before you start writing, or do you just go by your, just go with the flow?
I do outline. I pretty well follow a structure every time. But within that outline, I pants. Within that outline, I'm, you know, because when you start to see, oh, that's not going to work. And oftentimes I outline and I have the killer figured out and I get kind of far, and then I'm like, no, it's this person. So I have to make switches that way. But I have to outline because I can't just pull it out of my head. I'll get writer's block, and I never get writer's block, but I just won't know where to go. And so I have a lot of ways to just keep structure. Okay, I need to have an inciting incident here.
Yeah. You know? That's good. That's good. So you do a combination, which is good. So you're not frozen because you have a path forward, but you're, yes, not constricted either. So you're doing all the right things. That's good. I just saw some, it was an article I just read or a pod. I don't know when I was looking at something. I read a ton of things and podcasts. I listen to a lot of writing stuff all week long, but if somebody referred to their first draft as the vomit draft.
Yeah.
It was the writer that was, I was like, oh, well, that's kind of gross, but yeah, accurate. You know, you're just like, bleh, like, here's everything that it isn't, you know, here's everything I could possibly think of. And now I got to make it into something. I would call it something more elegant. Like, I refer to it as like the throwing the clay on the spinning thing in pottery class, like this big mass of clay, you know, and then you start shaping it into something. And
it's, well, now I think about Patrick Swayze, so yeah. I can't go there. but you know, I think that a lot of beginning writers get themselves in trouble because they don't do a vomit draft. They're always like, okay, I've got this page. Let me just rewrite it again.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you're right. It does stink, but that's okay. Keep moving, keep going.
Yeah.
Because you can just be constantly going back to the same five paragraphs, you know?
Yeah. I have a lot of friends that would like to be writers, but they deserve that. It's that fearfulness of they don't want it to be bad. And I would say you can't edit a blank page. So that, you know, you have to put all the bad words in too, and then take them out, because your brain is not going to form a perfect book the first time out. It's just not going to happen. So your brain is like, here's all my ideas. And then you take a break from it. I try to step away for a week or two and then come back to it and say, oh, well, why was I thinking that would be good? Because you've had a break from it. And then you can really kind of see you can see the story then, at least you can see it, and then you can make it better. But yeah, people get too worried about trying to be perfect. You know, perfectionism is not a thing that happens first draft. Very rarely, I would think, if at all. Well, so along these lines, how long does it take you to complete a novel from the beginning idea to the finished manuscript?
About 8 months.
Okay.
And it might be a little shorter than that, but the first and second draft take me the longest. And then after that, I just keep going through and filling plot holes and mistakes. And, you know, she puts her hat on in this scene, and then she puts her hat on the next scene too. How many hats does she have on? Stuff like that. So, I wish that, you know, by the time I get to the third draft, that I would write cleaner than I do, but I don't. So, you know, I just keep going through it, listening to it, reading it to myself, reading it to my critique group, and trying to improve on it.
That's good. You have a critique group. Because not everyone has that. So you send it to them, and then they give you kind and supportive feedback.
And then very much kind and supportive. I have a group of ladies, and we are all virtual, because it's hard for me to get out at night with my son. We just submit it to a Google file, and we read them out loud at night. And we've been together for several years.
That's great.
And we're all different levels of writing. You know, there's another published writer, but there's also other people who, one person's going to be a TV writer. We're just all different, at different stages of writing.
That's great.
It doesn't mean also that one of us is better than the other. Let me say that, because there are a lot of nights where I'm like, God, that's so good. You know, you don't say, I'm published. They really write good stuff.
Yeah. Being published is not, you know, exclusive. Talent is everywhere.
Yes.
Timing and luck have to come into play, and connections.
Absolutely.
And that's really what it is. Cause yeah, I think Stephen King even said, you know, they're handing out talent to every other person down at the door. You know, talent is everywhere. And it's just, you know, persistence, hard work, connections, luck, all those things come together. And then, you know, and it's also, if you even want to be published in a traditional way, because it's a business, and it's not for everyone. It's not a business everyone enjoys being a part of. So all of that comes in. It's not like the dream, you know. It's just not that at all. But it is fun to be a published writer, but it's not the best thing ever that you could be in your life, you know, in my opinion. Okay. And I know a lot about things when it comes to this stuff. So next question for you. Do you have a favorite character that you've written? And if so, what is it about that character that you enjoy so much?
I probably have a favorite character in every series, but in the Swinging 60s series, it probably is Ellie. Ellie is Dot's cousin. I'm working on the third book in the series. I just started it. When I work on it, I always like to have a little picture of what I think that character looks like. And I couldn't believe it. I came up with Carol Burnett. I'm like, yeah, that's Ellie. That is Ellie. You know, she's pretty, but not like, you know, magazine cover pretty, and she's kind of clunky, and she's funny, and she's lovable, and she's sweet. Ellie in the first book, she's, you know, I'm trying to keep her in the background, but she's got such heart that she keeps stepping up. So Ellie in the first book has been dating Al the electrician for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. And she can't get him not only to propose to her, but to get closer to her in an intimate kind of way, right? And so she is just trying to think of all these ways, and you have to go about it with that 50 sensibility, even though we're in the 60s, right? And she's 32 or something. And so she has to kind of be within that norm. And so, you know, your heart goes with Ellie and everything she's doing. In the second book in the series, Ellie is going to see this is not giving anything away, the JFK assassination. Mm-hmm. And it's going to change her a lot. It's going to devastate her. And so you see Ellie as well as Dot changing after that. And your heart goes out to her again, and she did it again. She's still my major subplot, because, you know, I think Ellie is kind of a reflection on us. She's not perfect. She's not beautiful. And she's just getting through the day. She's talented. She's creative. And she's loving towards Dot and other people, but she's dealing with life, you know. So definitely my favorite character.
Yeah, well, she's complicated, and I think that's what as writers we like, because they're interesting. They're not, definitely none of your characters are cardboard cutouts. They're all very you know, three-dimensional. You know, you feel like you know them, because they seem like real people, because it's just a, you know, it's a trap to fall into, especially with a traditional cozy kind of mystery, to make everyone seem perfect and this is a perfect life. But you don't have that. You don't have that going on in this book. Because there were a couple times as your editor, I said, are we going to talk about this? Like, is this a thing we're going to have in this book? Because, you know, what is the audience? Are we going to discuss, you know, abortion rights, for instance? And I think I mentioned that to you, and it is Texas. Yes. And like, all that kind of, like, you don't shy away from those things that really matter to women at any era we're in, you know, really have mattered. And, you know, having a family, not having a family, that was a big deal, you know, making that choice. So it's good that you did. I thought it was great that you didn't show, but I just was, as your editor, doing my due diligence, I wanted to point out to you, like, are we doing this? You wanted, and you know, 100% on your side, but I wanted, you know, definitely wanted to illuminate that you don't write in the regular way, I guess is what I mean.
You know, I want to approach these topics, but almost in a cozy way. And you can't say that it was just smooth sailing if a woman wanted to have a child or didn't want to have a child at that time. But we don't need to have a medical abstract on it either, but we do need it. It's a part of their life. It's part of the decisions they're having to make. And so if you leave it out, you've left out part of your character.
Yeah. Well, even just making the decision, it was getting a little better then, because my mom, she had me in 71, but, you know, she was graduate high school in the 60s. And I remember, you know, it was sort of like, you kind of had to get, you were supposed to get married. She was from the Midwest, very conservative area. And it was like, when you get married? And it was like, maybe she didn't want to get married, which I don't think she really wanted to. And I think she was really into the whole hippie free love kind of, not doing the conventional thing. She's never been a person that followed the rules. And I guess that explains a lot with me, but yeah, but it's sort of all of the conventions of the time. But I remember in It's a Wonderful Life, you know, when he's figuring out what happened to everyone in the family, and that guy's like, whatever happened to Mary? He's like, she's an old maid. Like, that was like the worst. She was like the worst, this beautiful librarian. And she was, because she did get married, and that was like a bad thing. So that obviously was way earlier than the 60s, but wasn't that much earlier. But I think it was still like an issue. Like, if you didn't want to have the regular cookie cutter lifestyle that your parents thought. Anyway, I like how you kind of touched on a lot of those things that, especially that relate to women in the book. I think it was good. So, fifth question, something a little outside the box. What experiences from your personal life have wound up in your fiction?
So I hadn't really thought about this that much, but I just did an author talk in a library, and I realized my family is all throughout my fiction. I didn't even occur to me until I sat down and really tried to think about it. Obviously, in my Pecan Bayou series, which is the self-published series, I wrote a character named Danny who has Down syndrome. Duh, I wonder where that came from. Although that character has a higher functioning level than my son has, because he has Down syndrome and autism, but he's kind of a composite, because, you know, my life is full of Down syndrome people. So he's a composite of all of these nice people that I have around me. And then when I was looking at it, I realized the 7-year-old son in that was my son, my oldest son at 7, because he's trying to get his scout badge. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And even my daughter has come in to different things along the way, in characters, in themes. Just she's always interfering with it, with that. I'm gonna stop here for a minute. You're not moving. Hello?
That's what I'm assuming.
My daughter, I just keep finding her in that I have a little character named Coco in one book who's coloring on the walls. Yes, that's her. When she was in middle school, we used to watch The Ghost Hunters on Sci-Fi, and I have a story that's around a tuberculosis hospital. I mean, she just keeps coming and coming. Then I've written about hotels, and my brother has worked in a hotel for like 30 years. And so that has come into my writing. And then finally, Dot in the Swinging 60s in Twist and Shout Murder, I realized she's kind of patterned after my mother, because this was actually the time when my mom, well, she was a little older than Dot, but she was somebody who was always working. I'm the daughter of a working mother. Just in our family, she was the one that I admired her, because there were times my dad was in the army. We didn't have a big army check, and she would bring in that extra money. And then, when they got older, she took her real estate license test, and she had to take it 5 times to pass it. And she kept going, and she kept taking it. And then she became this really good realtor, the kind of realtor you go out and trust, because she, you know, she'd worry about these people. We got to get them in this house. They don't have enough money or whatever. And so I realized she always taught me, you don't have to follow the track that other people follow. You know, I became a teacher, but she proved to me that you know, you can do anything that you want to do, that you set your mind to. I remember her saying that. And so there's a lot of Dot there, as far as just smart. Oh my gosh, she was smart. She could do mental math like you wouldn't believe. She could figure out the payment to your house in her mind. And I'm going on the calculator, you know. So yeah, they're all, my family's all in the book. My poor husband right now is going, where am I?
Yeah.
Right next to me.
Yeah. Don't worry, you'll get yours eventually.
That's right.
I wouldn't think he'd want to be in a mystery writer's novel, because he might end up being the dead person.
Truthfully, there's a little bit of him in every romantic hero I write, you know. That is the truth every time, you know. Yeah, there are things that I will put into these characters. I'm like, okay.
Oh, so. Well, that's sweet. We just have to make him listen to this podcast, and he'll be fine. Hey, you're in all the books, honey. You're in all the books. That's adorable.
Yeah.
That's sweet. That's nice. Okay, rapid fire quiz. Uh-oh. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Summer or winter?
Summer or winter, favorite season?
Mm-hmm. We're all just
winter, because I live in Houston and summer is just 2 steps from hell. It's really hot here.
you're the first person that said winter this season, because everyone else is, I've had a Canadian and a New Englander, and they're all like, summer, summer. So yay. Look free.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, these are all just rapid fire, whatever you think, whatever you feel like you should answer. Maybe one word if you want to.
Okay.
Sweet or savory?
Sweet.
Okay. That's kind of common. A lot of people say sweet. Comedy or drama?
Oh, that is really tough. Drama.
Okay. That's good. Yeah, you seem more on the dramatic edge of life.
But with a comedy, like Mrs. Maisel, you know, the little comedy edge to it, you know?
I like dark comedies.
That's it.
Yeah, I don't like sweetie comedies. I like dark comedies.
Yeah, I can't sit through a sitcom.
No. I love the Coen brothers movies, and to me they're hilarious, but they're really also really crazy and dark and scary, but they're really funny. That's my vibe. Like Fargo, you know.
Yes, I love Fargo.
Which is hilarious, you know, at times, but they're also chopping people up in wood chippers. So you know, you can tell a little bit about me. Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Get a lot of writing done in the morning?
I do. And then I also though have an afternoon writing time. I'll write in the morning and then I rest in the afternoon for a little while, and then it's like I get morning again. And I'll write. I actually do write with the clam chowder on the because it's, you know, dinner's got to cook. And so I'll usually write a little bit during that time.
Oh, all of your dreams have come true. Yay. That's awesome.
Well, yes.
That's good. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Okay. Well, that follows.
Very sweet.
Since you live on the edge of hell, is it iced coffee or are you hot coffee?
Hot coffee, lots of cream, lots of sugar.
Okay. That's good. Got to keep away for all the stuff that you do all day long. Seems like you get a lot of done. Seems like you get a lot done every day. Well, I really appreciate you being here. So what is up? So the Twist and Shout Murder was the first book in the series, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is there going to be so that would imply a second book. So do you have a name for that one? Are you working on that one? What's going on with you now?
The second book is completed. It is called If I Had a Hammer. As you can see, there's a theme here with songs from the 60s. I'm trying to choose songs from that exact year. And so that one is completed, and I think you can figure out the murder weapon already. And then the third book is called Do You Want to Know a Secret? Because that was a Beatles hit in 1964. The Beatles had like 5 hits in 64. So I just had to pick one. And that one is getting written in the car right now.
That's all right. Awesome. Well, that's fun. Well, you know, I'm a huge Beatles fan. So that I'm looking forward to that one, because in high school, my whole wall, my entire wall was covered in Beatles pictures and lyrics, and I was obsessed with the Beatles. I still am. I still love them very much. And my
I'm finding interesting in writing this, because it's actually going to take place, I think, and this could change, around a radio station, is that when you look at the music for 1964, there are 3 types of music that were in the top 40. There is the Beatles and all of that white rock, excuse me for saying it, the pop tunes, mm-hmm. but there's some magnificent R&B songs that came out during that time. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Dean Martin songs, you know, the Perry Como, that kind of stuff, which is really taking a third place. But if you look at how many songs are in the standings here, it's about 50-50 between R&B and bands like the Beatles. And historically, that is Freedom Summer. So I can't write a book about 1964 and not write about this thing that is happening. So of course I'm gonna touch on that within my characters, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's great. Yeah, well, like I said, you don't shy away from anything, so it's going to be really cool. It's gonna be a cool ride. I'm looking forward to it. Very groovy. It's gonna be a groovy time.
Totally groovy. You bet. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
And thank you for letting me come and talk about my book.
Of course. Yeah. Well, everyone needs to go out and get The Twist and Shout Murder and please, all of your other books, and follow Teresa. And we can find you. Your website is teresatrent.com.
Yes.
Okay. And we can find you.
Follow
you
my blog. Books to the Ceiling is teresatrent.blog. I'm there too.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again. And we'll have you on again down the road. Have a great rest all of the right. day.
You too.
Okay.